All right, let's do this thing here. It is the first day of March, 2013. It's a snowy day, kind of wet and cold, but I'm talking to Steve Kirkland, who was at one time the youngest employee at WHAS. Steve, let me ask you a question. I remember I was on the air in the late 80s, I guess, and I had met you as a, I think about the fifth grade, and you had a radio station at your house under the stairway. I remember the basement, and you had all kinds of WHAS jingles and signs up, and then you would come down to visit me on days off from school. I think you prayed for snow days.
I did.
Come down. And gradually, I would let you run the controls for me. And I remember one day in the late 80s, I'm on the air and you're doing that, and Skip Essick was the program director, and Skip walked down the hall and he saw you in there, and he did a double take and asked me to come out the hall. He said, "Who's the kid?" I said, "Be nice to that kid. He's going to run this place someday." And you basically did, didn't you?
Yeah.
You were operations director and making sure everything went on. Well, how did you get to that point? Where did this fascination with radio begin, and how did that happen?
Jack, I can remember from early on, I remember being with my grandmother in her basement and sawing the end off of her broom.
Really?
And, yes. And taking a Downy cap and screwing that on and making a microphone.
Oh, my gosh.
So
you were really little then.
Yeah,
then.
Yeah. And then just I've always had had a love for audio and radio and the media. When I was in middle school at church, I broke into the sound room so I could set microphones up for one of our choir performances, I think. And I remember the sound tech that was scheduled was trying to figure out how everything was set up and ready to go for him. And I now run the tech team at church.
Yeah. So. Yeah, you're on the staff, in fact. Yeah, that's right. Well, now, I remember you having basically a radio station in your basement at your parents' house. When I met you, were about the fifth grade, I think, but you'd had it before that. When
I did.
You built everything?
Well, just an accumulation of equipment through Christmas presents and Santa Claus and stuff like that. But yeah, I had WSRK. Stephen Ray Kirkland.
Yeah.
And I guess, Jack, I was on the air from about 3 in the afternoon until I was tired of it at night. But I had taken a Mr. Microphone. You remember
those? Sure, yeah.
All it was an FM transmitter. And I'd cut the microphone off of it, and I'd put a connector on it so I could plug my mixer into the input of that microphone. And ran the wire outside and up a tree, and I don't know, I guess I broadcast about 2 or 3 houses in my neighborhood. Had a full studio, 2 or 3 microphones so I could have guests on.
And you did, yeah.
I would play music, and I would record the HAS newscast at the top and bottom of the hour, and I'd play it back 10 minutes later.
You even had the jingles and things, I think, didn't you?
I did. Once I started working for HAS, we used a music service called TM Century. And the current songs that we would get would occasionally have a jingle package on it. So I became WSRK Kiss FM because they had a jingle package that didn't mention call letters, but it just sang Kiss FM. So I had that.
Oh, that's amazing. Do you remember the first microphone? Was it a Mr. that you had that you actually heard your voice and or anything like that? Do you remember anything like that?
That was mine. That was probably a Mr. microphone. Now, I remember I got a whole PA system. It was a Radio Shack amplifier. It was a little 20-watt amplifier. It came with a couple speakers and a couple really crappy microphones. But that was probably the first one that I remember talking on probably the most.
Yeah.
So,
well, you had some support from your parents there, obviously.
Lots of support.
Yeah.
allowing me to take over underneath the steps, and then what was my mother's sewing room, although she never sewed, became my larger studio where
expanded.
After we got a foreign exchange student, I got kicked out of that, but I got my father's work room, which was another room in the basement that had a high countertop that made kind L. So yeah. it was a much nicer studio.
In fact, he
has stuff in it now, and all my equipment obviously is not in it anymore. But the WSRK placard that he came
still
up with
there,
for
huh?
me is still hanging on the door. So along with some of the CD covers and stuff that I had on the wall to try to make it look like the real thing.
Did you work at any other radio stations prior to that time?
I started at HAS Radio.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then I worked for WMPI in Scottsburg on the weekends.
Okay.
Shortly after I started at HAS.
I had forgotten that. So you went to work at first of all, you were at school. I was
at Seneca High School when I started.
Right, yeah. And you were kind of a celebrity there, weren't you? Do the
morning announcements on just the PA system. And then my senior year, they put in a telecommunications department. And I was working at HAS Radio then. And Channel 11 was in the same building at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
They had gotten a new set. Well, we didn't have a set, so I called, I think I called you, and you got me in contact with, who was the GM at that time?
I have to think about that. Wasn't Bob Morris, was it?
No, it was not Bob Morris. It was,
My mind's gone blank here.
He was just, Neil Coovan.
Neil Coovan, sure.
And I met with Neil Coovan. Scared to death, met with Neil Coovan and told him what Seneca was doing and that we really needed a set. They were getting rid of two sets, and their MAV action news set they used at 6 o'clock, they weren't giving to anybody. And he said, if you'll get a truck and you'll get a crew, we'll give it to you. Well, I thought it'd take a couple hours to get this set. It took all day. All day to get it. But
you got your crew and your truck and did it, huh?
Yep.
That's good. Very good. How old were you when you started working at WHAS, and how did that actually come about? I mean, Skip Essick was the program director, mm-hmm. was he? Hmm?
It was.
He's the one that hired you?
He was the one who hired me.
How old were you?
I would have been 16. It was 1990. I did not have my driver's license yet. My grades were not where my parents wanted them, so I couldn't. They would not allow me to get my license. My parents had to petition a judge in order for me to work at WHAS because it was a 24-hour operation. So they jumped through all the hoops, and I actually was hired to work 1 hour on Saturday. It was when Fred Wishy was starting to do his.
Oh, yes.
Ask Fred talk mm-hmm. show.
So you'd be the board operator.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. You and I worked together on it.
Yeah.
I think I got the job because I annoyed Skip so much by calling him and asking him. I said, hey, Skip, I heard the promo for Ask Fred. I can do that. Let me do it. And he's like, fine, just come in and do it. We'll work everything else out. And the rest is history. So I think his exact words were, well, you're not going to make any money at this. I'm going to pay you. It was a little bit better than minimum wage. Just go ahead and put 2 hours down on your time card so it's at least worth you coming downtown.
That is wild. How long did that continue? That was during so you were still in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And did those hours increase some as you were still in high school?
It seemed like I got all the fill-in shifts that he could use. I think I proved myself that I could obviously, do the task. And, I wanted to do as much as I could. So I did a lot of Friday nights, 7 to 1 a.m. And
you're all supportive of this?
No. Absolutely, problem. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And I remember, Jack, Skip calling me. I was in my parents' laundry room, and he said, hey, do you want to work Christmas? Well, yeah, I want to work Christmas. Well, good, we're going to put you on the air. thought, oh my gosh, you're going to do, I said, you mean I get to talk on the air? He's like, yep. He said, we're going to play Christmas music. We're going to play 15-minute blocks. You talk in between the blocks. But it's overnight Christmas, midnight to 6. Can you do it? Yeah, I can do it.
50,000 watts going around the country and I'm 16 years old.
Yep.
Wow. So that was quite a step.
Yep.
What'd that feel like? Do you remember that night, obviously?
I remember opening the mic for the first time and reading the forecast. And my voice, you could hear the quiver in my voice. Well, I still have the tape somewhere.
You must have that recorded somewhere, yeah.
Wow. Yep. And then high-pitched, probably awful, but one of those experiences that once in a lifetime deal.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, I was on Facebook the other night, and I saw somebody had put the pictures up of the Weekend Warriors.
Yeah,
You and Joe Elliott and Terry Dismore, and I forget.
Mark Stephen Williams and John Ross.
And, you were obviously the kid in that.
That's right. I brought the average mean
way down. So hours began to increase then, and what happened from there?
We started some midday talk. Doug McKelvin, instead of playing music, went to a talk format.
From number three.
Uh-huh. And I think I lobbied Skip. He picked me. I was in college at that time. And
so your hours are more flexible.
Mm-hmm. And
had your driver's license by now?
I did have my driver's license. Yeah. I got, after riding the TARC bus downtown and having to be at the station at 6 a.m., or I'm sorry, be at the station by 9 a.m., having to leave home at 6 a.m. to be able to do that, it didn't take me long to bring my grades up.
That's incentive. Good for your parents, though. That's good.
So, and I got the Midday with McKelvin gig, and so I was working noon to 3, Monday through Friday. And I think at that time I had an overnight air shift on Saturday night into Sunday morning, I think, is what I was doing. So it was, it was great. Doug made me a part of the show, character on the on the show. So,
contributed.
I worked with Doug through the time he left. I guess at some point Rush Limbaugh came on the air.
About 94, somewhere along there.
And I board op Limbaugh for a while. Skip wanted that to have a smooth start, so I did that. And I don't remember if Doug took a little bit of a hiatus or if he started immediately, but I know Metz retired around that time into his Mets here commentaries, and so I shifted and worked 9 to midnight with Doug.
Oh, okay. So you were a team then.
Yeah, Then when Doug left, I continued to do. I guess I was doing the 7 to midnight board op shift
sports
at that time.
And
I guess I continued to do that for a little while, but nights just they weren't my thing, and it was getting to be that Wayne needed somebody. So I started producing the morning show.
I'd been there at 5. So sometimes you were there by yourself.
And sometimes I was, there were a lot of mornings that we played a couple songs before Wayne walked in.
Good.
So
that's good. Well, you had some experiences. And do you remember any particular moments or phone calls when, let's start with Doug's show. Do you remember any particular phone calls or anything, any particular incidents or anything? Or you had to screen callers is what you were doing.
I remember that, we had a demographic that we wanted to hear on the air. And at the time, talk radio was a lot of older people who would call in. So
it's Element then.
So it was my job to keep, as Skip would refer to it in musical terms, you got to keep the hits on the air. You don't want the golden oldies on the air. So I probably tweaked off a lot of old folks and Skip.
Who's this young punk?
That's right. I told a lot of people I'd pass their comments on.
And they never feedback from
they
Skip
never
on that.
Whenever Skip would get a call, because I would get to the point with some of them that they would, you know, yell at me and not be real nice and want to talk to my boss, and I'd gladly give them their number. And whenever they would ask for that, my in response to them would be, well, tell Skip I said hi when you talk to him. And he would come to me and he would say, well, I got a call on you today. I'd say, yeah. They said that you told them to tell me hi. I said, yeah. He goes, stop doing that. But thanks for keeping them off the air. I never stopped telling them that.
That's wild. So that improved. What was it like changing from, was any difference changing from noon to 3 to the 9 to midnight thing? Were different callers or anything? Or still kind of the same thing?
A lot of the same folks. We had a lot of regular callers. You know, Doug liked to rile folks up, and I remember a great story about Doug. The phones weren't ringing, so he started talking about how this bicycle rider got in his way as he was driving to work and started complaining about bicycle riders. The phone lines just, I mean, lit up. I mean, I couldn't, one would hang up and I'd be screening the next call. And I remember I had to fill some paperwork out after each show, what we talked about for the FCC license stuff that had to be filled out each year. And he threw the paperwork up for me to fill out. And he said, it was a good show, wasn't it? I said, yeah. I said, man, I said, you must have really been tweaked. He goes, never happened. He said, I just made it all up. He said, it was good radio, wasn't it? Have a good weekend. I'll see you later. And walked out. So never happened.
Wow. We had a lot of any emergencies, you remember, being on the air when emergencies were happening in those times?
I can remember severe weather coverage. Yeah. And, you're in a... At that time, we were in a glass room, basically.
Inside the building, yeah.
Kind of in the middle of the building, yeah. But we looked out to the lobby, which was all glass. And I guess looking back on it, it didn't make a whole lot of sense why we were sitting in there doing that. But, you're doing it to protect people who are listening. And the radio is a lifeline for folks. It's kind of sad now when I listen to HAS radio and we're in severe weather coverage and we're simulcasting with the TV station. We were the authority then, and now they're just a funnel for somebody else. Not that the information is not there, but it's a different approach. Yeah. So.
Let's talk about equipment for a minute. From the time that you started there to the time you left, equipment changed quite a bit, I would think, didn't it? Walk me through that a little bit.
Well, I mean, let's...
Still using turntables when you first came?
Yeah, Joe Donovan was. But, and, from time to time, I'd play something off turntable, a music bumper or something for Doug that
even
we didn't
Christmas
have.
Christmas music all night was probably a lot of
right. But yeah, those turntables were in there, reel-to-reel. Was still in there. Really, when I started, we were playing all the music off carts still.
Yeah.
I ran across a memo from Doug McKelvin. I should have written down the date on it, but it said, the two Denon CD players have been installed in the studio. We'll play everything off of compact disc from this point. So that was fairly soon after I started. I want to say that was probably in 91 when we went to all CD. And I guess as we were downtown in downtown Louisville, we pretty much stayed cart and CD and even reel to reel. I mean, we recorded Paul Harvey on reel to reel.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Every day.
Delayed it and played back. Yeah.
I remember when Jane Norris started soon after, we put a DAT machine in the HAS control room where we could record and archive her show on DAT, because we play that back for some best of shows, and it never worked right. it just never worked right. Then when we moved to Bishop Lane, which I had a pretty major role in moving the station, when we moved, we got a new control board. We went from two studios to three, so the news person had their own studio. the board op producer had their own studio, and then there was the on-air talk studio. Yeah.
Did you have any input on designing those?
I actually helped wire all three for HAS. Just, you know, one of those things that needed extra hands, so
Charlie Strickland?
Charlie Strickland was chief engineer.
Who were the other engineers?
Harry Sondheim. Uh-huh. Larry Basinger had already retired. Uh-huh. But Mark Stephen Williams was one. Mark did a lot of the wiring in all of the studios on Bishop Lane there.
How long did that take? Do you recall how long that process was?
Was a slow process, and they moved each station kind of one at a time. Mm-hmm. And I can remember we moved offices, and HAS and AMZ were still on the air from the downtown studio. So I'd start my day downtown and end it at Bishop Lane.
Bishop Lane. Wow. Some long days.
But the biggest technical change came when they put the Prophet system on the air, which was all digital audio.
What is the Prophet system?
Most stations would use it for automation. It played back anything you heard on the air. Sound effects, commercials, music, IDs, anything like that were loaded into the digital audio system. I actually went to Ogallala, Nebraska to be trained on this system for HAS and the other Clear Channel stations. There were several of us that went and did that. But I was the first person to play digital audio off of the system.
Really?
On the air. It happened during Rush Limbaugh, and we had loaded up some of the customized liners that Rush had done, and that was the first digital audio that was played.
You remember what year that was?
I don't. It would have been
this was after
a year or two after we moved out there. It was about, I guess it was along the lines of the time that J-Core and Clear Channel merged together, because we were slated to get a Scott's studio system. And in fact, they had Scott's studios on the air on some of the FM stations. And then Clear Channel and J-Core merged, and they realized they were going to do a lot of this talent sharing, and everybody needed to be on the same system in order for this to
By talent sharing, you mean happen. Somebody could be in Cincinnati and do a program for Ogallala, Nebraska, or
right.
someplace. Voice
right.
cracking is what they call it. Whatever.
Christopher Randolph, who's on AMZ now, is a good example. He's on AMZ, he's on a station in Florida, and I think he's in Cincinnati, but he does that all from
here. So the equipment's made that possible.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, it's made it very hard for somebody like me who wanted to get involved in radio or have a career in radio, have a place to get their feet wet.
Because they don't need that.
Because they don't need it. Yeah. Because
certainly not on air.
The small stations are getting a big-time jock like Chris Randolph, because he's primarily on the air in Louisville. But by the way, we want you to.
How does that work? What does a person do? What would a Chris Randolph do? How would that work? If he's going to do something for Ogallala, Nebraska again, obviously.
Well, you know, it depends on the time of day. I've heard that some of them do is they'll work about 30 minutes ahead, so their shift. Maybe, let's say it's 9 to noon. Mm-hmm. They may be doing 5 stations. Well, they'll do a break for the station in Louisville that's going to run 30 minutes from now. They'll do the same thing for their 4 other stations. They've got it set up now so that all these phone calls will route to them so they can put phone calls on the air and make it sound very localized.
So he's basically live is what he is.
Yep.
So it's not going a matter of going in and laying down voice tracks and playing them 3 days later. It's basically
that can be done.
Yeah,
a lot of stuff that you hear on the weekends on those stations are that way. So
interesting. That's a long way from you doing midnight to 6 and playing music, isn't it?
Yep.
Wow. Well, some other things obviously happened here too as you began to progress and you assumed more more technical duties. How did that happen, and when did that start to happen?
I guess
and not as much on-air stuff.
Kelly Carls, who's still the operations manager at HAS now. Let's back up.
Mm-hmm.
Skip left. Rick Belcher came in. Rick was not program director for very long.
This would have been in the middle 90s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when Rick left, I actually applied to be the operations manager, to be the program director.
What were you doing?
I was executive producer at that time. Rick had promoted me to that, so I was over all the producers.
Mm-hmm. Scheduling producers to do the shows and things
mm-hmm.
like that.
Actually, I think I was doing all of the scheduling. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of stuff for Rick because he didn't do a whole lot.
So executive producer.
Yeah, I was executive producer, and Rick left, and it was right around Derby time. So they made me interim operations manager, and I actually interviewed with Mark Thomas. Bob Shear was sick and had not passed away at the time, but Mark was handling most of the day-to-day
manager
stuff, and sat down with Mark, and Mark, you know, basically told me, he said, we're going to take care of you during, you know, you're stepping up and keeping us afloat during Derby and in this interim time here. But he looked at me and said, you realize we're not going to make you the operations manager. And I said, I guess I kind of realized that, but, you know, I still want you to know that this is my end goal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's to do it at HAS. I don't want to do it anywhere else. Kelly Carls was hired as the operations manager, and I was promoted to assistant operations manager when Rick left. Kelly gave me more and more responsibility, and at the time of the J-Corps Clear Channel merger, they made Kelly a regional program director or vice president of programming or some
regional,
fancy
yeah. mm-hmm.
title. And he was gone a lot. At that time, I was still in the studio producing Jane's show. So he pulled me aside after he had gotten the promotion, and he said, I'm going to need you to run a lot of the day-to-day station operations. I'm not going to be around that much, and I need you to pick up that responsibility, I need you to come out of the studio. So that was hard for me
because that's my love.
Yeah. But I realized that there are a lot of people who get sick, so it was just kind of a natural thing for me to do the fill-in during that mm-hmm. time. So I still got to do the parts that I loved. And I got to do more of the planning for big events like Derby, and we'd do all kinds of remotes at that time that they don't do a whole lot of anymore.
Remotes
we used
like
to do
what,
tailgate party shows mm-hmm. for UVL football games.
Other broadcasts in other cities and
yeah,
things like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, we went to Disney some.
Yep.
We'd follow the Cards and the Cats. I went to several bowl games and did all the tech for the UofL games. That's something else that I did. I would go with Paul Rogers and set up all of his equipment for the UofL home football games and home basketball games. Really, Paul was having to do all that stuff on his own, and I basically did it for free. But now they have somebody that goes with him.
Oh, is that right?
it was one of those things.
So, have you been promoted to operations manager by this time, or just assistant?
I was always assistant.
Yeah. In fact, you were running. Things,
yeah, yeah, yeah. In fact, the memo when I left in 2001. Kelly put in the memo thanking me for various things, for helping transition the station from downtown to Bishop Lane, and also basically said, you know, even though I have the title of operations manager, Steve really did the day-to-day operations of the station and would just let me come check in from time to time. So
so my prediction to Skip came true. That
yeah, I will, yeah, I may not have had the exact title were, that I wanted, running. But I was doing it. I was doing it.
You ever talk with Skip any?
You know, Skip and I talked a little bit after he left, and I was still at the station. I haven't talked to him in a long time. I've talked to McKelvin some, especially now just on Facebook, being able to catch up with him. I run into Milton at Papa Murphy's Pizza of all places in St. Matthews from time to time. I still go back and host the overnight portion of the Crusade for Children.
You've been involved with the Crusade for a long time because your dad was involved.
Even before I worked at HAS Radio, I was involved with the Crusade. And I remember, I don't think it was the first year that I was a runner, but it was one of the second or third year, the tornado outbreak. B.J. Thomas was singing Raindrops Keep Falling on Your Head, and they had to evacuate the center for a tornado warning. Yeah. Well, they threw everything back to Studio H. And guess what? All the camera operators went out into the field to cover the tornado coverage for the news. So I'm just sitting in a corner, and I guess it was the floor director looked at me and goes, "You think you can run this?" And he pointed to one of the, it was the big studio cameras at the time. And I said, yeah, of course I can run that. And they showed
and
me
how,
they
showed me how
I would have been probably 11 or 12.
Wow.
Maybe younger than that.
Yeah.
I know you were supposed to be a certain age to be a runner, but because of my dad's involvement, they let me do it. it got to the point where I just went down every year and would stay all night and run camera. And I remember one year, Bud Harbsmeyer caught me in the lobby and said, "Hey, can I talk to you?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure." I was doing some remotes on Saturday morning. You were still on the air, and we'd go out and we'd talk to the firefighters, and I thought it was something about that. He goes, we want you to host the overnight part of the Crusade with Van Vance. I thought, oh, my gosh, this is great. So that was my first experience in TV. Yeah.
When was that? Gosh, that was a long time.
You know, Jack, I try to each year figure out how many years I've been involved with the Crusade, and I can't.
Yeah, it's been a,
lot of years.
And you've done the overnight ever since then, haven't you?
Yep.
With Van Vance and several other people since then.
It was Van, then Joe Arnold for several years, then Renee Murphy, then another radio person from, I can't remember who that was, Gene Kang, Joanne Dixon, all WHAS TV employees. Yeah. They usually try to team me up with somebody who works for television now. And last year it was Brooke Katz, who's fairly new to WHAS TV.
Funny, you're the old pro now.
Well, I joke with them. I say, you know, I said, I'll usually have the same person for a couple years, and then they realize this staying up all night thing is not is for the birds. But I love doing it. It's, I mean, the Crusade is just a great organization and a great cause, and that the money that's raised for the Crusade for Children stays here in Kentucky and Southern Indiana. I'm really pleased to be a part of it.
Yeah, good, very good. Let's talk about Derby a minute. You you oversaw several Derby broadcasts out there on the backside and through the week, and then Derby Day itself and all the events too. That was a momentous task.
My first Derby, I was with Milton Metz on Millionaire's Row, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever. I did that for several years.
And you're still
with
a teenager
Milton
at this point.
Milton and I'd go out Oaks Day and Derby Day, and we usually were working with a TV station who was using Milton. I think Channel 15 a few years, and I think Channel 32 used Milton for a few years. because Milton number one could get anywhere at Churchill Downs. He could talk his way into the president's suite. I remember we interviewed George Bush, President George Bush, senior, when he attended the Derby, and Milton works in mysterious ways, and all of a sudden he tells me, he goes, "We're going to the paddock. We have to be there at such and such time, and they're going to give me the president." So I'm telling Skip, "We're getting the president. We're getting the president." And I can remember standing, watching Milton interviewing John Asher's there as well. And we want to get it on as quick as we can. Well, John's got the remote equipment to get it on. So we take a microphone and hold it up to this old cassette recorder and play the interview back we can get it on the air as it happens. Wow.
Special moments.
Yeah. And then we used Brinch Bolden, who was an HAS employee for a long time. He'd come back in freelance and produce the Derby. I started running the board out at Churchill Downs, bringing in all the different sources, and Brinch produced. And Brinch and Kelly didn't see eye to eye on what Brinch was being paid. So I was asked to produce the Derby. So I produced 3, 4, 5, and came back 1 year and produced it as well. So I guess in 2002 was my last Derby.
And that's pretty interesting because you're still in your 20s at that time. You're 39.
I'm 39
right? 39
now.
Right, yep. Now, and you've been gone for 11 years. Yep. 12 years now. Left there in
2001. No, I left there in 2001.
Yeah, 2001.
Yeah, so.
So you were doing all this and you're still in your 20s. Mm-hmm. So, and the youngest hired there when you were hired, so that's good. You packed a lot in there.
Yeah. And I guess before the Derby, I produced our Thunder River Louisville coverage, which was, we would start at 3 in the afternoon and go till midnight.
Yeah.
So all live from the
golf
house. A
lot of locations around. Yeah. Tell me about some of the people you worked with. You worked with a lot of people. You worked with Milton. You worked with Doug McKelvin, with Wayne Perkey, with Fred Wishy.
Yeah.
Jay Norris. Gosh, you had a whole bunch of people in there.
A lot of egos.
How was that?
Jack, you learn something from everybody that you're in contact with.
Really?
I can remember Wayne screaming at me one day because I came in and changed something on the remote control that turned a MARTI transmitter on so that Fred could go to the network. I was a kid to a lot of those
You were a kid.
People, yeah. So, but it's interesting. Wayne and I are great friends. I had been gone from HAS for a while. Wayne had retired. And he called me up and he said, "Hey, I know this is a long shot, but I'm going to be on WRKA. I need a board op." He said, would you consider coming to do that?
Right?
And, I was in a good place at Farm Bureau where I was. And I said, "Wayne, I can't leave." But gave him some other names of some other people who could help. So, I feel like I really earned the respect and trust with folks that I worked with. So, and I got to work with you.
Yeah. Well, a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll never forget that. Skip coming out. "Who's the kid?" Be nice to him. He's going to run it. Well, he had some special times, special memories. I was going to ask you, this is kind of backtracking a little bit, but you were there when through Clear Channel. You worked through Clear Channel all along, yeah. Mm-hmm. But when J-Corp and Clear Channel merged, what was that like? That surprise you any, or did things change any? Because that had a pretty big impact.
Well, when we first heard about... Let's go back a little farther.
Mm-hmm.
When it was HAS and AMZ and Bob Shear was the general manager, we did things a lot different because HAS and AMZ were the cash cows of Clear Channel.
Okay.
So when this, you know, we started buying more stations and the merger happened, I guess we, at the time of the merger, probably had 7 or 8 radio stations, QMF and 790 AM and 1080 AM and gosh, just a slew of stations, mm-hmm. And the Kentucky News Network.
Yeah.
So when we all first heard about the J-Corps merger, we thought, oh my gosh, I mean, they had DJX and VEZ. And
well, that's right. They were in this market already.
Yeah, they were already in this market. Yeah. So we thought, oh my God, this is going to be great. We're going to hand pick what we want. You know, we'll keep HAS and AMZ. We'll spin off some of these other lesser stations and we'll get the bigger mm-hmm. stations.
Yeah.
And the FCC came in and said, no, Clear Channel, you're merging with J-Corps, so you already have your allotment in this market, and that's what you got.
Wow.
So the other stations had to be spun off. Which that was a little disappointing to us. And then as we learned more about the merger, we realized that Clear Channel had promised Randy Michaels, who was the president of J-Corps at the time, that he'd be over the radio division.
So that was a big step.
That was a big step because J-Corps did things a lot different than Clear Channel did. It was a lot of
philosophy,
a lot of top down.
Yep.
And not
because up to this point,
AC
has been bottom up because as long as they were producing money, Clear Channel just kind of left them alone and said, thank you.
And HAS and AMZ weren't the big dogs anymore.
Oh, yeah. That's
because with that J-Corps merger, they got a lot of bigger markets.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was real hard to swallow.
Change day-to-day operations and everything?
Oh, yeah. You didn't make a decision locally anymore. Mm-hmm. And if you look at what HAS radio is now and AMZ radio, that's why.
Not much local influence, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you look at a station like, I remember Kelly telling me when we put the automation system in, the digital audio playback, he told me, he said, there will always be somebody sitting in the board op chair at HAS. I still talk to Kelly on occasion, especially now working at Wave, since our meteorologists provide them their stuff. But I called him and I said, hey, I need you to go, I need somebody, I can't get anybody to answer in the studio. I need somebody to check this line out so you'll have your interview this afternoon. He said, well, it'll have to be me because there's nobody in the HAS studio.
Oh,
and I came so close to saying, I thought you told me there'd always be somebody in there.
In a WHAS studio.
Now, there's somebody always in the building.
Yeah, but not in the studio.
But they're not in the studio. I think anytime there's syndicated programming on now, nobody's in there.
Wow. That's a big, big change.
Big change.
Yeah.
Big change.
Yeah. Well, you had some great times there, didn't you?
Yeah.
Great times.
Yeah.
And now you're at Wave Television, mm-hmm. WAV here in Louisville. Mm-hmm. What are you doing here?
I'm the IT manager. I handle computers, and everything here is a computer. So anything you see on the air is being played off of a HD server, from our commercials to our programming to our news content, all comes off of computers.
Oh.
And then, Jack, just like when I was at HAS, I'll do anything that they ask me to do. So they found out that I had done some traffic reporting. That's something we ought to talk about quickly.
Right. Yeah.
So I'll fill in on the air some here.
Well, you did the traffic control report, didn't you?
I did.
WHAS?
Uh-huh. When Ron Robertson was still there, they were always looking for somebody to fill in for him. You know, of course, I raised my hand. I'll try that.
And you actually had a crash one day, didn't you?
We did. We were over the Louisville Zoo. It was just after probably the 7 o'clock news, and I had done a traffic report, and the pilot said to me, oh, man, the polar bears are just, they're really active today. I'm going to put them on your side of the helicopter. And he turned the helicopter, and we started spinning. Out of control over the Louisville Zoo.
Mm-hmm. Over the polar bears.
Over the polar bears. And then he had kind of gotten a little bit of control, and we were over the lion's den. And then, you know, right outside kind of where the merry-go-round is at the zoo now, there's still the grassy area, and that's where the chopper finally rested. Wow. Broke the skids out from underneath the
were you injured at chopper. All?
No. Was scared to death.
I'm sure you were.
This was before the day of cell phones. And we slapped to the ground. I still had all the equipment on and was still powered up. And I hear Wayne say, Skywatch 84, Steve Kirkland.
Come
on. Steve? Hello. Well, boy, I don't like when that happens. My mother's listening.
Oh, my goodness. And, of course, he didn't know.
He didn't know. And so we walked down to someone's house down the hill.
Oh, because Zoo wasn't open at that time.
They had a cell phone. We told them who we were. They didn't know who we were.
Oh, my
God. Okay, we're flying Skywatch. We just crashed up there. The guy says, I got a cell phone here. Just take it. Bring it back to me when you're done.
Oh, my God.
So we got word back to the station that we had crashed. Everybody was okay. So
What a story. Well, now your traffic reporting here at WAVE is not from a helicopter.
Not from a helicopter. You're in the studio in front of the green wall, which has been interesting.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You build your maps. And the other interesting part of that is, you know, from the helicopter, you saw firsthand what was going on. Well, you just have traffic data that's coming into a computer here, and, you know, you rely on that. And you call the police every 15 or 20 minutes to see if there's anything new. So you build your own maps and then stand up and talk about them. So.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
Well, you're still a young man. What's ahead? Of your own radio station?
Maybe I can make it out of here, stay here longer than 11 years. you know, Jack, I love this business, but I also love what I do at church.
Mm-hmm. Technical director there.
Yeah, and so many churches don't have that person who knows or has the knowledge that not only I have, but other people on our tech team have.
Mm-hmm.
So part of me would like to start my own business where I get to go out and help.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Folks like that.
Well, it's becoming more important in that area too.
Yeah.
More and more churches are using media stuff. Yeah.
So maybe in the next 10 years, I'll have started my own.
That's good.
My own business.
You know, the 10 years and you'll still be a young guy working on it. That's good. Well, thanks, Steve. It's been very, very interesting. I've known you a long time, so it's good to see you come from under your stairs to where you are
today
and all the things in
between.
Thanks.
Maybe I'll make it someday.
I think you're well on your way. Thanks very much.
Thank you.